From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
It is a Saturday evening, 6:09, a very pleasant 67 degrees. Esme Murphy here. We have a great show lined up for you. And it's great to be here in the studios, feeling very pleasant out this evening. I actually went with my son to Arizona to look at colleges, and it's really hot down there. It was in the upper 90s. And as they like to say down there, it's a dry heat. But gosh, it felt awfully pleasant to come back here and then to, you know, have the plane come down. You could see the leaves changing. And I mean, it's a beautiful state, wonderful people. I was really impressed how nice everyone was. Every time I whipped out a map, somebody would come by and say, hey, can I help you? But it is great to be back in the wonderful state of Minnesota and the Twin Cities, and it feels awfully pleasant outside. Well, folks, we do have a great show lined up for you. Later on in this half hour, we're going to chat with a gentleman who has really been helpful in helping me sort out some of the very big issues and stories involving immigration. His name is Esteban Rivera. He is an immigration attorney, and he really has been incredibly helpful. He's got many, many clients that he's working to help in terms of both the changing news on DACA, the Dreamer Act, and also the travel ban, which continues to evolve and definitely affects so many here in the Twin Cities. And then in our next half hour for this hour, we're going to chat with Chris Newcomer and Elizabeth Hayes. They are with the Firefly Sisterhood. And this was kind of really cool. I actually found this idea when I was filling in on the 9 a.m. show at WCCO Television. It's a very fun show anchored by Jason DeRussia and Kylie Burse. And they had these women on. And what they do is they kind of – it's a volunteer group that pairs people up who have just been diagnosed with breast cancer with a survivor. And so the volunteer can say, hey, you're about to start this kind of chemotherapy. I've been there. I've done that. And they try and pair them up by age. Let's say somebody who's younger, perhaps has some kids, just so that they can go through the experiences together and sort of mentor the other person through the process. And I just thought that was such an incredible idea, and they did a wonderful job, Jason and Kylie, interviewing these women. And I thought, you know, I need to do that on the radio. And we are going to have a great 7 o'clock hour as well. We're going to talk with an expert on internet addiction. Think about that. There's a lot. It's a growing problem for many, many people. We're going to talk to somebody about how to identify it, how people should kind of handle it. When are the warning? What are the warning signs? When do you know if you have a problem or somebody you love has a problem? We're also going to visit with the author of the Lincoln Dell Cookbook. People of a certain age will remember that fabulous restaurant. There was one right near where I used to live, right in St. Louis Park. And Dave Schultz at 8 o'clock. So, folks, keep it right here. You are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. When we come back, Esteban Rivera and the latest in the shifting situations with DACA, the Dreamer Act, and also the travel ban. It is a very pleasant 66 degrees out there, 6:15 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Well, one of the big stories of the year really has been the shifting policies of the Trump administration, both on DACA, that's the Dreamer Act, the act that was put into place by President Obama to protect those people who are individuals who came to this country illegally before the age of 16. And the president has had different and shifting positions on this. It's created a great deal of confusion and uncertainty. People have had to register again for the status. And also the shifting positions on the travel ban. And somebody I've turned to a number of times to help me is a prominent local immigration attorney, Esteban Rivera. And Esteban is joining us now. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Esme. Thank you very much for having me.
All right.
Once again.
Absolutely. And Esteban, I do want to ask you, first of all, in terms of DACA, What is the status right now? Because the president has said that he's been back and forth on this right now, and I know a lot of people were facing a deadline in having to sort of reapply for the status.
Yes, that's true. So what's happening now is the president said people were able to renew, file DACA for people who already had the status until October 5th. But only if your status was about to expire or set to expire by March 5th of 2018. So that's why it's known the deadline for Congress to act on this and to pass, a Dream Act or something similar to that.
Has this created a lot of confusion, though, and uncertainty about what's really going on?
Yes, for sure. For a lot of people, I have a lot of clients who have DACA, who have been in this country for over 20 years, who went to high school, had this DACA for 5 years, and worked in big companies in Minnesota like Cargill, Target, Boston Scientific. And I have one that his status is going to expire in May of 2018. And at this point, we don't know if he's going to be able to renew. And if Congress doesn't pass the law, he will not be able to work. And, what is very troublesome is Secretary Kelly said, if nothing happens by March 5th, 2018, people should get ready to leave and pack. So, the administration is very, very...
Wow, okay.
Puts a lot of fear in the community.
Right. So even though the president has supported, a renewed DACA and said that, the fact that it sounds like it's still very much up in the air, what happens to these people?
Correct. Yeah. If Congress doesn't act by March 5th of 2018, the only possibility is that President Trump will go back and eliminate the action that he took to eliminate DACA.
Right. And this is 800,000 people, and I think the estimate here is it 3,000 here?
I hear 60,000.
Okay. All right, so it's more than that.
3,000 were the people who, the people thought that they need to renew. So 3,000 were, 600,000 in total in the United States, about 60,000 in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, and 3,000 of those were in this window that needed to renew because their DACA was going to expire. Until March 5th of 2018.
And how long, when you have DACA and you've got to keep renewing it, how long does it last for? Because it's not permanent, is that right?
Yeah, it's 2 years. So this started in 2012. So people first started in 2012, they qualify at the time, and then in 2014 they renew it, and then 2016. It depends when people apply, but it's every 2 years.
Got it. Explain what this allows people to do.
So what it gives you is a work permit, a work authorization card. And with that work authorization card, these people can obtain a social security, also a driver's license. For example, in Minnesota, people who are undocumented and not obtain a driver's license. And that creates a problem not only for them, but for the other people who are driving because they cannot get insurance. And it's very problematic. Some other states, like, for example, Illinois, they have a law that allow people, undocumented people, to have driver's license, and then you eliminate this problem, not only for them, but for all the other people who are driving in the roads.
And I know that there are some Republican legislators in southern Minnesota who are backing some form of a legal driver's license for undocumented workers for exactly that reason, because, A, they'd have to go through the same kinds of training and pass the same kind of tests that all of us do, and they'd also have insurance, which if they do get into an accident, that helps with everybody.
Correct.
Another debate. But let me ask you also about the travel ban, because this has been very confusing for people who've been following this. I can't imagine what it's like for people who are affected by it. But the latest version of the travel ban, once again, does affect many, many people, including a very large community here in the Twin Cities of Somali Americans and their relatives and people who are in Somalia. What is your take on the latest version of this travel ban?
I think it's more of the same. You know, he added two countries to try to avoid the constitutional grounds that Hawaii, for example, had, because he added Venezuela and he added North Korea. So now he's claiming that it's not a Muslim travel ban. Because one of the biggest arguments that the ACLU had and other states that, you know, brought suit against the travel ban said that, you know, is he is discriminating against religion and national origin. So now adding Venezuela and North Korea, he's saying it's not a Muslim ban because Venezuela and North Korea are not Muslim countries. But everybody knows that he's just doing this to avoid these constitutional claims.
In other words, the addition of Venezuela, some Venezuelans, obviously a largely Catholic country, and then you've got North Korea, which is not a Muslim country, but I think we all know there are very few people coming from North Korea into the United States. It's almost non-existent. So I think the inclusion of North Korea has raised a lot of eyebrows as well. But in terms of the actual ramifications for people who are traveling, or might have relatives back in the, in Somalia or that part of the world, it sounds like it still directly affects them.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And the last ban that already is in effect had this quote unquote solution that if people were able to show that they have significant ties with the U.S., they were going to be able to enter. But that only created more problems because when the people enter the country, they need to go to secondary inspection, and it's impossible to analyze if they have significant contacts with the United States. But immigration lawyers, we put packets, for example, waivers into this finding of ties to the United States. But for me, for an attorney, it will take me 2 or 3 months to put together a packet, and it will be hundreds of pages to show this. But it's impossible to analyze this in the airport when people are coming. So it just doesn't make any sense.
In terms of going back to DACA, what are you advising clients who have the DACA status?
So the people who are able to renew, meaning that their DACA is set to expire prior to March 5th of 2018, I advise them to renew them. And I have several clients who were lucky enough that their DACA were within a time period, and I filed it before October 5th. For people who, I have one client that it appeared that the person will qualify, but because all of these talks that the people will be removed, I advised not to file it until the determination was made. And the client agreed with that, and you know, we explore all the solutions. And then at the end, you know, they were glad that they didn't file because now they are kind of in limbo. They don't know what's going to happen. And with my clients, but the DACA is set to expire after March 5th of 2018, you know, I just tell them, keep watching the news and hope for Congress to make a change and to hopefully enact the DREAM Act.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. And then in terms of the people who come to you in terms of the travel ban, what are some of the more difficult situations that you've seen that people have had to face?
I have people who've been waiting in refugee camps for years, and they were set to come to the United States in the next few weeks. And then, you know, the families were very excited about their relatives coming, and then the travel ban passed, and then they couldn't come. So they have to wait for 120 days, and they are still waiting. And they are elders, grandparents, and their kids waiting who have lived in refugee camps and who have been in line to come to the United States for years. Those are one of the most difficult parts that I have experienced. Also, people who were attending the University of Minnesota, people who were pursuing a PhD, people who were pursuing medical school, were not able to enter the country, were delayed. At the end, some of them were able to enter, but it caused a lot of problems and a lot of money for a lot of people.
All right. Well, listen, Estevan Rivera, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. That was Estevan Rivera. He's a noted immigration attorney. Sorry, folks, for the quality of that audio there. Sometimes different phones don't work as well in terms of the modulating of the voice. So anyway, great to have him on. I just want to let you know we got a lot going on here. Coming up, as I mentioned earlier, it's kind of a neat program. And I think it's one, and I'm going to ask these ladies if this is something that is modeled on any other programs that help those who are suffering from cancers or different ailments. But this is aimed at breast cancer specifically. It's called the Firefly Sisterhood, and they pair up a breast cancer survivor with somebody who's newly diagnosed. And when you think about it, it's somebody who can help them walk you through about what's going to happen and know the ups and the downs and, you know, where you might go and how you're going to feel and how can you deal with it, or how can you deal with the holidays or grown children, or maybe you still have, you know, young children. I just thought it was a really, really cool program when I heard about it. And I think these folks will shed some light on it. But it's one that you think, gosh, you know, that could benefit an awful lot of people, because if you've got that kind of an ailment, and if you've got, you know, or a different form of cancer, I mean, I wonder if there are programs out there that can help in that regard as well. So we'll find out that answer as well. And then at 7:08 after the news break, I will be joined by Tatiana Jordan. She's the chief parenting officer of BARC, and she is going to talk to us about internet addiction, something that a lot of people are increasingly concerned about, not just with kids, but also with adults as well. So keep it right here, folks. You are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 6:33 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock, along with studio coordinator Kevin Reed. Well, this past week, Wednesday, I was on the 9 a.m. show at WCCO TV, which is a fun show anchored by Jason DeRusha and Kylie Burse. And they had a great interview with two women who are with the Firefly Sisterhood. And I listened to the interview and I thought, this is really cool. I want to do this for radio, because I think a lot of people need to know about this organization. And I also think it could really serve as a model of providing help and assistance and guidance for perhaps other ailments. This is focused right now around breast cancer. Joining us from the Firefly Sisterhood is Chris Newcomer. She's the executive director. And Elizabeth Hayes, she's the user of services, and she comes back to volunteer at Firefly. Ladies, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Chris, why don't we start? And am I saying your name correctly? Is it Newcomer?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. Chris, why don't you tell us what exactly is the Firefly Sisterhood?
It's a peer mentoring program for women who really are in any stage of their breast cancer experience. We, from the day you're diagnosed through active treatment and beyond, we have women coming back to us a year out and saying, hey, I'm not done yet, and I need somebody to talk to. So it's really peer mentoring.
All right. And let me ask you, Chris, how did this – who came up with this idea? Was this you, and why did you come up with it?
Well, I actually am the founding executive director. The idea came from some research that Yoplait from General Mills had been doing around what was missing in breast cancer. And really, this peer mentoring was missing, yet the research was starting to show how important it was. So they gave us some startup funds, and we took off.
All right. And are you a survivor as well?
I am not. I will tell you, when I was asked to sort of take this on, my sister-in-law had just had her double mastectomy, so it hit pretty close to home.
Absolutely. All right. Let's talk about, Elizabeth, talk about your experience, and how did you sort of first hear of Firefly?
Sure. I was diagnosed with breast cancer right before Christmas, and I had a question about reconstruction.
Christmas
of 2016.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
And I had a question about reconstruction and asked my care coordinator, who gave me Firefly Sisterhood's contact information. And so I contacted Firefly Sisterhood, had a wonderful conversation with Jenny, the program manager, and felt instantly cared for when she assured me that they would find me a match that could help me talk to a woman about reconstruction. And I was matched with a guide who had just a wonderful sense of humor and could answer the questions that I needed to help solidify my decision right before my surgery. So I just had a wonderful experience right from the start. I knew I wanted to be a part of the program.
And Elizabeth, what did it mean? Because I'm sure you have wonderful doctors. Got, you know, I'm sure a supportive family. What did it mean to be able to really talk to somebody who'd been there?
You know, that is a great question. For me, just that instant of talking to someone who had walked my path was so powerful. She just knew from the beginning what I was going through. And it was like an instant connection. Even though I did have, you know, the very supportive family and friends, it's just so much more powerful when somebody has been in your shoes and can tell you what to expect prior to surgery, what you can expect in terms of even how to handle the support you're receiving. It was very, very meaningful for me.
Let me ask you, Chris, how do you decide, first of all, how does somebody get in touch with Firefly?
You know, the two ways. The best, easiest way for us at our end is to go to our website, and there's a big, huge orange button right on the homepage that says Get Support. And it drops into, we only ask three questions at that point. We need your name, your phone number, and your email. And it drops into our system, and we get a notification within a minute that you are requesting support. And we have a rule that we'll get back to you within 24 hours telling you that, yes, we got your request. We need to set up a time to talk. Okay. And then we do an intake interview for someone so we know what their experience is and what they're looking for. Because sometimes what they think they're looking for really isn't what they're looking for. So it takes about an hour, and then we kind of go into our system and pull up some people that might work.
All right. And let me ask you, first of all, is there any cost for this?
Nope.
Okay, so it's free. Now, let me ask you this. So somebody calls in. Now, we have a very large listening audience that goes way, way, way up, you know, throughout Minnesota into other states and regions. Is all of this over the phone, or is it in person? Because I imagine that there's some people wondering, well, gee, I'd love to take advantage of this, but I live in Bemidji.
Right. Well, first of all, we do serve the whole state of Minnesota. We serve Western Wisconsin. We actually will talk to anybody who calls. We never want to be that system that says, oh, go call this person, or we don't serve you. We'll always try to answer your calls. We just did an evaluation. About 50% of our what we call matches actually meet in person. Most of it's over the phone. Some of it's email. We've even had one whole match that went through text. So,
oh, wow.
yeah, I know.
Oh, that's, you know, some people are texters and others aren't. So
exactly. And so our volunteers, our peer mentors, who we call guides, are trained to ask what's going to be most comfortable for you. And sometimes we've had women from Brainerd come to the cities to meet their sister, see their family, and then they'll connect for a cup of coffee. So it just has to be organic and meet the needs of the woman who's seeking support.
And in terms of, Elizabeth, your experience, how much contact did you have with your, is it mentor? Is that the correct term?
With my guide. In my experience, so for me, I really wanted to talk to her prior to my surgery. So for me, it started through email, and then we had a phone call or two, and then another email, and then we met at a social event that Firefly Sisterhood gave this past summer. We just met for the first time. But for me, in terms of the support I was seeking, I really just wanted some information prior to the surgery. And so for me, it was just a phone call or two. And then I was good with what I needed. Some matches can go, you know, 4 or 5 months even, or as long as the support seeker would like.
Got it.
So it was just what I needed.
Okay. And so for you, it was this issue of the surgery, which obviously is a, you know,
yes,
a huge step. And actually,
yes,
it's, you know, I don't know if you were in this position, but sometimes they give you these options. I've had friends who've had the options of just the lumpectomy, or did they get the double mastectomy, or the, you know, the single. And it's overwhelming. I'm not sure that any of them knew about Firefly. But is that sort of what you were struggling with?
Yes, you know, exactly. So for me, I had a strong family history, so I knew right away I wanted a double mastectomy. But my issue was I really did not want to reconstruct. And I had not met a single woman around my age group or in my community that hadn't chosen, that had chosen that path. So when I was calling Firefly, it was specifically because I wanted to chat with a woman that had chosen that option for herself and just to see how that was for her. And I kind of went in knowing what I would like to do and just hearing that other voice saying, this is what I did and this is how it worked for me was exactly what I needed to just clarify my own decision making.
Right. And I think, and I guess it's sort of a testament to how far we've come that, you know, that these choices are available.
Right.
Right. Really. I mean, when you think about it, but I think it's very difficult. And I'm old enough to remember that, you know, I remember my mother, some of my mother's friends getting breast cancer. And it's almost as if it was sort of whispered, you know, we didn't, you know, it just was. And it's very difficult to really understand that now. But I mean, literally, it's because it was involved the breasts that people didn't talk about it.
Exactly.
And it was just, you know, something almost sort of in the background. Listen, one of the things I did want to ask is, how do you decide who gets paired up with who as a guide? Maybe, Chris, you can answer that. Like, for instance, I know some former coworker who's a young woman in her 30s who, you know, who's a new mother who's, you know, been diagnosed. And I mean, how do you sort of, because breast cancer can hit people really at any stage of their lives. And it's obviously difficult no matter what stage of life you're in.
Well, we actually do matching on three sort of first criteria: age, your treatment, and then your life experience. So exactly, you have a friend who's young, 35, has young kids. We have 190 trained volunteers. So our ability to match on two or three criteria is pretty strong because we have this big pool. So we go in, we take that interview. We've also already done that with all of our volunteers. So we have their all of their treatments, histories and things. And then we kind of look for that other stuff that doesn't always show up. So, for example, we matched two women, and we knew in their stuff that they were both knitters. And she called and she said, how did you, oh my gosh, we're knitters, and we hit it off well. Well, that's sort of our secret sauce, because we take time to get to know everybody who comes through our program. So, and so far that's been 500 people in 3 years.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but I would imagine sort of the anything or else, you know, if you do have children that are elementary school or middle school, I mean, I bet, how do you talk to your children? What do you tell them? I know people who've been worried about the impact on them that the children would be worried, or how do you, you know, deal with the partner or the husband? Or do you get into those kinds of issues as well?
Oh, absolutely. We get in, I think in our recent evaluation, the top ones were, you know, talking about what's this treatment feel like, just like Elizabeth's story, emotional support. How do I deal with my family? One of the other things is, how do I go back to work? So we have a gamut of what people need, and that's why we do that intake interview, because that lets us get under the superficials. I'm stage two, I'm having this, blah, blah, blah. It gets us like, what's really going on, you know? So, and then we can find somebody who may have had teenagers, and how do you deal with a teenage daughter when you're having a double mastectomy?
I can't begin to imagine, because it's hard enough in regular circumstances to deal with teenagers or to deal with small children, or else even, you know, I'm sure that even with adult children, that could be such a source of anxiety. Ladies, I have to take a quick break, but I would like to continue the conversation because I'm sure there are people who are listening who want to get in touch with you, and also maybe they want to become volunteers as well. So keep it here, folks. We're talking with two ladies from the Firefly Sisterhood. It is a volunteer organization that helps guide and mentor people who are going through the process, the journey of getting the diagnosis of breast cancer and then coming out the other end, trying to figure out how to deal with family and friends and life and get that kind of support that they It is 66 degrees, 649 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Do want to let you folks know that we are keeping an eye on the Gopher football game at Purdue. The score is 16-14. They have been in a pretty extensive lightning delay, just under 10 minutes left. But the Gophers are trailing that game 16-14. We will give you a final when it happens. It's still play is still not resumed, though. Right now, though, we are chatting with Chris Newcomer and Elizabeth Hayes. They are two ladies who are with Firefly Sisterhood. It is a volunteer organization that helps mentor and guide people who are going through breast cancer diagnoses and helping. They match up somebody who's been through breast cancer with somebody who is just been diagnosed or is just facing surgery or whatever stage they're at, to kind of like be able to talk them through it and explain, hey, this is what happened to me and this is what you might want to know. Chris, let me ask you, there are probably people out there who are thinking, hey, I went through breast cancer. I'd like to volunteer. What would you have to say to them?
We still got Elizabeth. We lost Chris.
Oh, we lost Chris. Okay, I'm sorry. Elizabeth, can you answer that question?
Absolutely. So we do guide training several times a year, and they would still need to reach out to our website, which is fireflysisterhood.org, and fill out the information. And then there would be an informational interview, just like how we would interview a support seeker as well, just to see how... just to hear their story about their background so that we can match them correctly with a support seeker.
Okay.
And then they would go through a training.
And how much training is there?
It's a 3-hour training with a catered lunch or dinner from Panera. So it's a nice time to meet other breast cancer survivors and to kind of go through the training. And then there is some ongoing training that you're required throughout the year as kind of a continuing ed, so to speak.
All right. And Chris, thank you. So I don't know how we lost you there, but we got you back. That's what counts. What do you need? Could you use other volunteers to serve as guides?
Absolutely. Yeah, yes. We lose about 10 to 15 per year. And some people are just sort of saying, okay, I've done it for 3 years. So we are always looking for volunteers. We do our trainings quarterly, and we try to do one on sort of the west side of the river and then the east side of the river. But they have to be in person. It's mandatory to be in person because that's the way we get to know you.
Right.
And
you obviously want somebody who's got it's got to be somebody who these are not professionals or counselors, but you've got to have somebody who I can clearly do this job because this is a pretty tricky situation.
It is, and we've actually had women go through our training thinking they were ready, and after our training, they come up and say, "I'm not ready. I'm going to come back in 6 months."
Oh, really? Because it's to revisit that. Can't be easy as well. Although I imagine some people, Elizabeth, he says you've both been served, and gotten the help, but then you're also providing it. I mean, is it helpful to you or is it sometimes painful to revisit that?
You know what? For me, it's absolutely helpful. Once you've been through that experience, at least in my experience, I absolutely wanted to help right away. Even in that initial phone call with Jenny, when I was seeking support, I knew I wanted to be a guide. I knew I wanted to offer it to other women going through these experiences. So for me, it wasn't painful. It was something I very much wanted to do.
I imagine it might even be empowering.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, that you're sort of owning this and using your experience, as difficult and, painful as it was, to help somebody else. I think everybody feels good when they can do that.
Yes, it's an overwhelming experience, and you learn so much through the process that to help others through their own process is very empowering. That's a great word for it.
Chris, let me ask you, in terms of this program, is there anything else like it, or was this modeled after something?
There are a couple of programs in other parts of the country. Most of them are related to an academic health center or a health system. We are one of the few community-based programs, and for us, that was an intentional choice. because we knew we wanted to serve lots and lots of women, and we needed a bigger pool than you could probably find just in one system. And so we came up as a community health system, a community program, and so now we have all of our health systems in the state referring to us. So there's not this like, oh, it's only an Allina program or it's only a Health Partners. No, it's a community-based, and it doesn't matter where you get your treatment. We will serve you.
And do people, do the providers and the doctors know about it? I mean, I would imagine, you know, in some facilities here in the Twin Cities that really do a lot of work on, you know, with breast cancer patients, I would imagine they would know about it. But how widespread is the knowledge about the kind of services you provide?
Right now, we're pretty strong in what we call sort of the 21-county metro area, including western Wisconsin. But we're starting to build relationships with systems outside of that sort of metro area. Duluth, we get people from Duluth. We get people from Fargo, Marshall. So we really work in the state. I will say we know that about 40% of our referrals, people who call and ask for support, do come from the system. So we're pretty well known in all the systems, not just the doctors, the nurses, the nurse practitioners, the infusion nurses, the therapists, kind of all the way down.
Right. And is there, you know, is there any thought, you know, that I mean, it sounds like such a good idea, and I think it would be so applicable for other ailments as well, or even other cancers. I mean, has anybody kind of come to you and said, God, you do such a great job, we should start it for maybe prostate cancer or some other form of cancer or ailment?
Right. We've actually had a couple conversations with some other disease-specific nonprofits in the state. And one of the things, when you get to build it from scratch and you're not trying to clump it onto something else, we made a lot of decisions to make sure that our program could be easily replicated by in another city or in another disease. So it's pretty plug and play because we did all the heavy lifting of the complexity of building a matching system and all the legal stuff you have to go through and everything. So, we would be happy to work with anybody to replicate it.
All right. And again, how can people find you, whether they might want to volunteer, whether they know somebody, or maybe they need the help as well? How can people find you?
The best way is just to go to fireflysisterhood.org and click get support or contact us, send us an info at. Or leave a message on our office phone, which is 952-582-2972, and we'll get back to you on Monday.
Okay, well, 952-582-2972, and the cost is perfect. It's free.
Yeah, it's free. It's absolutely. We have some amazing donors and supporters in the community, so we don't want cost to be a barrier to anyone to use our services.
Well, Chris and Elizabeth, thank you so much. Again, it's Firefly Sisterhood. Wonderful organization. Great information, ladies. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks, keep it here. News Radio 830 WCCO.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time, or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.